This is Audible.
Keeper of Dragons, The Mere Treaty, by J.A. Colican. Read by Zachary Hetrick. For Annabella, may you continue to grow up strong and fearless. Prologue. 67 minutes. That's how long it had been since Eldric won. Not just won, but demolished us. Gaber hadn't moved from the spot we found him in, and no one had said a word. Reality of the events hadn't kicked in yet, or maybe I was just in shock. I finally found my feet and wandered a few yards away to an old tree stump. My whole body ached, and not just physically. My heart was broken. All the elves and trolls that we'd left behind were gone, kidnapped by the Elden. My head spun with all the possibilities of their fate, a fate they entrusted to me. A loud clanking sound met my ears as a large shadow enveloped me. My heart jumped when my eyes met Jericho's.
"You need to stay close, my prince,"
he growled and tilted his head to the ground beside him. On the snow-covered dirt lay an old sword enclosed in a brown leather sheath. The thin handle glinted at me even though the sun had stopped shining on our home that once seemed like paradise. The sword beckoned me as I grabbed the hilt and pulled it from its cover. It was lighter than I had expected as I held it out in front of me.
"This is not a toy."
Jericho grabbed the sword from my hand.
"Weaponry is the last level of training. But given the circumstances, it is imperative that we skip some lessons and start your training immediately."
Was he really discussing training with me right now? We just lost.
"A dragon's sword is a part of him."
He leaned down and sheathed the sword.
"Always keep it attached to your back. You will learn to use your Mahir to keep it close, even when shifted into your dragon."
Jericho dropped the sword into my lap and I wrapped my hand around the soft leather. "Why would a dragon need a sword?" I asked. "I mean, dragons had fire and could fly. Why would we fight with swords?"
"These battles you have fought have been nothing more than a path to war. In a war, it is vital to keep your Mahir strong. When you shift, you use your Mahir. When you breathe fire, you use your Mahir. Your sword uses none. It is always available while keeping your Mahir full."
Where Jericho spoke, the brighter his eyes shone.
"You are the keeper of dragons. A time of fear is upon us. The fate of all true beings is in your hands. Keep them strong."
I attached the sword to my back, pulling the leather straps tight around my chest. With each breath I took, I felt the sword shift on my back and the straps dig into my upper body. Jericho was right. For some reason, Eva and I were chosen by the fates to be the keeper of dragons. It has been our destiny since the day we were born. My eyes scanned the other creatures as they slowly began to come back to reality. Cairo was almost glued to Eva's side. Tears ran down her cheeks, but he had his arm around her shoulder as he whispered words of encouragement in her ear. Evander found his feet and helped Gaber to stand. His body shook as he blew out a harsh breath. His once bright eyes looked dull, as if his internal light had been extinguished. Slowly, Evander, king of the trolls, escorted Prince Gaber toward one of the walkways.
"Keeper of Dragons."
Queen Annabelle of the Fairy's voice made me jump.
"Please keep me informed of any developments. The Elven Alliance is still in effect, but I must return home to check on my remaining fairies. It seems the few that remained have been scared off."
I nodded my agreement, unable to find the words. I was scared too.
"You defeated the Pharaoh tonight. For that, we will be forever grateful."
My eyes met hers as a sad smile formed on her face.
"They are alive. I feel it within me. We will find them. And you, Keeper of Dragons, will save us all."
With that, she turned her back to me and took off into the evening sky. Both Jericho and I watched Queen Annabelle and the few remaining fairies until they were nothing more than spots in the sky. The weight of her words held me in place. The fairies their fate in me, even after we lost to King Eldric. Jericho put his hand on my shoulder, pulling me from my thoughts.
Meet in the command center in an hour. We must prepare for war.
He growled and stomped off toward Cairo and Eva. War. A war solely on my shoulders. Chapter 1. I stood on the steps of O'Connor Castle, Sela and Rylan behind me to either side, and stared out over the sea of dragon faces. They all stared up at me with pleading, adoring eyes, chanting at me to save them, save their families, save their homes. From behind, Sela whispered in my ear,
"We have faith in you, son. You are the keeper of dragons. For you, everything is possible. I know you can do it."
They were all wrong. I shook my head and tried to tell them I was just a boy. Okay, so maybe I was 18, but that was barely an adult in human terms, and I was almost a baby to the dragons. The roar from the audience was so loud that it drowned out even my own voice. How could Sela's whisper have reached me over the crowd? I needed to make everyone understand I was going to let them all down. I wasn't a warrior. I wasn't brave. I was just scared. I still felt like a kid, sometimes. I shouted over the noise as loud as I could, hurting my throat, but it worked. I could hear my words over the racket. "You don't understand! You need to run! The Elden are coming for us all! Run! Fly!" Shouts from the crowd grew louder, echoing off the castle's stone steps. Their cries went from pleading to a rumble of cheering. It was as though I just told them I could defeat the Elden all by myself. Don't worry about a thing. It'll all be done by lunchtime. What on earth was wrong with these people? I looked around, trying to spot the Wolans who should have been protecting me, but I couldn't see anything but the crowd as it surged forward. Some people in the crowd held their kids up at me like they were lion cubs. I knew they would all be gone soon, parents and kids. Their faces burned into my mind, and I saw them wherever I looked, like an afterglow from a bright light. They wouldn't listen. The Elden were coming, and I couldn't save them. I'd have to. I felt a tingle in my mind. I grabbed at my head as I sensed the darkness grow around O'Connor and press inward. After a few seconds, though, the shell of dark reached the wards that protected the floating island. For the moment, it had stopped creeping tighter around the island. When it hit the wards, the shadow-like substance shuddered like it was straining as hard as it could to break through. As it pressed harder still, the shadow grew even darker, until it blocked out almost all the sun's light, making it look like dusk. From the corner of my eye, I spotted water droplets from O'Connor's crystal-pure waterfall begin to rise up into the air. Once beautiful, the waters looked sinister and putrid as they rose higher and higher, spreading out as they went. In less than a minute, the fouled water had spread to coat the inside of the protective wards like a bubble. A glimmer overtook the bubble like a million little dazzling stars. The sight on any other day would have been beautiful if it wasn't for the danger we were in. My stomach dropped as I realized what was going on. O'Connor's waters had coated the magical protection keeping us all alive, and now it was freezing. It looked just like Pareso's spirit water had when it froze, Eldric's cruel way of stealing almost all the Elventilium. Was that what was happening here? I didn't want to think about that right now. I had more urgent things to worry about, like staying alive. I shouted to warn the other dragons, but the crowd's roaring cheer drowned out my voice again. Couldn't they see the danger we were in? I thought it must have been Eldric using some magical trick. Then I tried to run, but no matter how hard I pumped my legs, I wasn't going anywhere. I was stuck there, forced to watch and be a part of whatever was about to happen. The thin, frozen shell cracked. I hated to be reminded of the tragic things that happened at Pareso, but the way this ice was cracking was a terrifying replay of what had happened there, even down to the exact sounds the ice had made. It was like a recording. Every crack and tinkle noise was the same as it had been the first time in the elven homeland. Suddenly, the ice shattered. Frozen shards rained down on us like broken glass. Dragons in the crowd cried out when the razor-sharp ice shards hit them. I pushed my Mahir senses outward as I tried to find Eldric, but I felt something missing. For a second, I thought back to the first time I'd gone camping with my parents, and I'd woken up in the middle of the night, scared for some reason. It had taken me a minute to realize that everything seemed wrong that night because there was no city noise. Something I'd never realized was there had been missing, and I had felt it before figuring out why I felt it. This was like that. What was missing, though? The wards. I could feel the wards missing. I quickly looked up, expecting to see something terrible happening because the wards were gone. The darkness, which had been straining against the wards, jerked into motion when the resistance vanished, bearing down on Okana again, along with me and all the dragons. But it was now going even faster. There was a vibration in the air as it snapped forward. I screamed, but no sound came out. My lungs felt like they were full of water, like the air had turned into gelatin inside me, and it hurt deep inside my chest. I panicked, but still couldn't do anything more than run in place. The approaching darkness seemed to form a face. A terrible, huge, menacing face. Glowing orange eyes were like spotlights that only lit up one person. Me. The Dragon Prince shouldn't have been so terrified that he screamed. But that's what I did. Or tried to, but failed because I still felt like I had breathed in a lung full of jelly. My mind reeled and I couldn't think of anything to do but stand there, screaming in silence and trying to warn everyone. Even with so many of them downed by shards of ice, my people still looked at me with hope shining in their eyes. It was like they couldn't see the icy doom all around them, or Eldric's laughing, snarling face. Why didn't they move out of the way? My eyes grew teary. I failed them, but could it ever have ended another way? I'd been trying to tell everyone I was going to fail them ever since I'd come to Okana, and now it had come true. Just before the darkness reached the crowd, I felt the energy inside me spin, making my vision whirl. Silver sparks came from my fingertips like sparklers on the 4th of July. I had felt that before. My tilium was almost at capacity, and there was nothing I could do about it. Not with the whole crowd standing in front of me. If I just let it go and overflow, people might be hurt. Energy rushed through me, filling me up until I felt it pressing on my heart. As the heat inside me went from just warm to an almost painful hot, I started pouring sweat. I fought to hold it in. My tilium grew stronger than me and burst out, shooting like spotlights from my fingers, my eyes, my mouth, until even my skin glowed and shot beams of light everywhere. The tilium inside me flashed outward like a shockwave, washing over the crowd and my parents. I'd lost all control over it. Where the shockwave hit the crowd, people instantly froze like glass and then shattered into thousands of pieces. It wasn't possible. That was nothing like what I had seen before when my unstable tilium grew too big for me to hold it back. The powerful wave kept speeding outward until it crashed into the blackness coming for us all. For a moment, I thought it might push King Eldric's darkness away and bring the light back to Okana. But as my tilium crashed into the darkness, it rippled and then just vanished. My heart sank. I thought again of the ripple in a pond after throwing a pebble in, violent at first, and then fading away to nothing. The menacing face in the darkness laughed, so loud that it made my ears ring. What seemed like a black curtain crept forward, coming closer until it closed in over us all. Eldric's open, laughing mouth surrounded me. Everything went pitch black. A few moments later, light appeared in front of me. It ran like a slit from left to right, and as it widened even more, I saw huge teeth. They were easily as tall as me. The beginnings of panic stirred inside as I realized I was somehow inside the giant King Eldric's mouth. Or I had shrunk. I couldn't be sure which. Nothing made sense. I scrambled over the huge teeth, hoping to drop down to the ground below. But when I got over them, I found I was standing on something soft. I looked down to see that I was on Eldric's bottom lip, hundreds of feet in the air. There was no way Eldric was that tall, even as huge as he was. I was trapped in the mouth of a giant, flying Elden King. Far below, the ground sped by, going faster and faster until the smaller details were just a blur. Far ahead, I saw something moving. Small spots dotted the ground like ants. It had to be a trick of my imagination. A solid line reached across the grass and rocks ahead, green on one side and white on the other. I squinted to get a better look and realized there was a thick, even layer of snow. Everything was covered in ice and frost. Even the trees were white, and some were bent over from the weight of the deep snow piled on them. The tiny dots grew larger the closer we got. I took a deep breath and willed my senses to expand, reaching out to them. I felt nothing, sensed no one. It was impossible because I could clearly see them. My jaw dropped and my scalp tingled with shock. Far below, the missing elves and their troll companions laid in fear. Each elf and troll was staked out, spread eagle on the ground. Over them stood Elden, some carrying whips and others with some sort of staff. Cries of pain and fear faintly carried to me on the wind. My dizziness grew, and I had to grab onto the teeth to keep from falling. I was helpless to do anything as the Elden hurt my allies, beings who had sworn to defend me with their lives. I reached out toward them, willing my maw here to bring my dragon. But nothing happened. A deep, booming thunder washed over me, and I realized King Eldric was laughing. It was a terrifying, evil sound. How dare he? How could anyone do such a thing? And the Elden and elves were cousins. My knees shook with fear, and I had to struggle to calm myself. But then I surprised myself by screaming, "You monster! Release them now!" Where had that rage suddenly come from? The laughter grew louder, and it beat away whatever courage I had. It echoed in my head, seeming to bounce around inside my skull, driving out my thoughts. I was even more terrified. I contemplated my fate if I jumped. Anything to get away from the terrible king. As I got ready to jump, though, I noticed that all of the elves and trolls had blurry faces, like pencil marks smudged with an eraser. One single face stuck out, his smudged lines wiggling and growing together, becoming clearer until taking on the shape of Prince Gaber. He was in Paraiso. How did he get here? He had blood on his face, and his eyes were wide with terror. One of the biggest, most frightening Elden I had ever seen stood over him holding a whip, which he was using with enthusiasm. Gaber's eyes seemed to find mine, and they stretched even wider in surprise. He opened his mouth, and in my mind, I could hear him pleading for me to help his elves. Not him, but his elves. Tears fell from my eyes. Here I was, the Keeper of Dragons, but helpless to protect the true beings as everyone said I was fated to do. Some destiny. Large birds that looked like buzzards flew over the vast field of elves and trolls. They were deep purple in color, and I wondered why I had never seen them before. And where on earth were there purple snow buzzards? The entire scene confused me. My attention shifted to the Elden standing over Prince Gaber. I wiped the tears from my eyes so I could see better. Something was different. Then I saw what was wrong. The Elden's massive whip was squirming. It turned and shifted like a snake. When it stopped moving, it became a thick stick, 10 feet long. And at the end where the whip popper had been, now there was just one huge blade that gleamed in the bright light reflecting from the thick snow. He laughed at Gaber, a deep, ominous cackle. The sound made my stomach drop and my eyes grow wide. He raised the new weapon over his head with both hands, ready to bring it down on Gaber. I reached out, desperate to do something, anything, but my maw here escaped me, leaving me immobilized. My anger rose again. I was the Keeper of Dragons. Even without Eva, the Golden Dragon, I had a duty. Not only was Gaber the Prince of the Elves, allies of my dragon people, but he was also my friend, or the closest thing I had to it, other than Eva. I felt heat in my belly, growing and growing. The rage started to become painful from the heat. I realized immediately what it was. My tilium was about to overflow. Again. I snarled and willed my Mahir to rise with my anger. Suddenly, I felt it growing inside me, building alongside the tilium. In a moment, it would be beyond my control, too. For once, the feeling of uncontrolled power didn't scare me. Instead, I focused on him. I imagined my two energies exploding from me together in a single instant, and concentrated on making it shoot down at the Elden below. We kept streaking through the air, aiming at the huge field with all the elves and trolls. A thought flashed through my mind. I shouldn't be able to see Gaber in such detail from so far away. Now wasn't the time for doubt, so I shoved the thought aside. I shouted a warrior's cry as my tilium and Mahir reached the point of overflowing at the same time. I imagined my energy washing over the Elden, tearing him down to just his atoms. And the giant Eldric spit me out! I shot through the air, spinning out of control, and I saw glimpses of his face floating above me, laughing. The booming voice inside my skull said,
"You tasted better before you cleansed it, little stealer of tilium. It's okay, though, because I have plenty of my own."
As I kept spinning and falling, the icy, snowy ground came up to meet me. At my speed and distance, I wouldn't survive. I tried once again to call for my dragon. With desperation giving me strength and focusing my thoughts, I called out for it. But I still didn't sense it. Where was my dragon in all this? Why had it abandoned me now, when I needed it most? The dragon was me. I was the dragon. I still had my Mahir. It should have worked. The ground was fast approaching. The panic in the back of my mind exploded into complete terror, and I screamed in my mind, desperate for my dragon. I willed myself to shift. My Mahir flowed from me, searching and seeking. It had a mind of its own as it looked for my dragon. In another instant, I felt something. It had grabbed onto the shockwave of my Mahir, which was reaching out to find my dragon still. I saw a blinding flash, so bright that I had to shield my face. When I opened my eyes, I realized that I wasn't falling. I was flying. I looked over and saw my wings stretched out. It was glorious. My heart soared and my fear fled. No wonder I hadn't been able to call my dragon. I'd been the dragon the entire time. That didn't make any sense at all, though. I remembered being just plain Cole a moment before. Or had I just been too frightened to notice that I'd been the dragon that entire time? It was confusing. I tilted to my left and swept toward the elves and trolls. The ice-covered fields of snow were still several miles away. The only thing that wasn't pure white was a small mass of black spots, which had to be the elves and trolls. As I leveled out to head toward them, I remembered the brilliant flash of light. Had that been when I shifted? Far above, the sky's usual blue hue suddenly seemed to split apart like sunlight hitting a crystal. And then the raw beauty of what I saw in the skies took my breath away. As far as my dragon eyes could see, in every direction, there was a multitude of colors that seemed to twist and boil across the sky, gleaming and then fading, then shining again, never the same colors twice in a row. I realized they must be the Northern Lights, though I had never seen them before. Nothing else could be so strikingly beautiful. I shook my head hard to clear my mind of the distraction, and reluctantly turned my eyes to the scene below. I had almost reached Prince Gaber and the Elden, but King Eldric seemed to be missing. I had the strange idea that the Northern Lights display pushed the evil king away, but with him gone, I wasn't quite as afraid as I had been. I dove at the Elden who stood laughing over Gaber and opened my mouth, releasing a geyser of purple fire far larger than any fire breath I'd seen among the Wolans. Then I realized I wasn't breathing fire, but a deadly frost as cold as space. It only moved like flames. As I dove at my target, mouth still open and breathing the ice fire, I let out all my fear and anger with one mighty roar that shook the ground. I sat bolt upright and threw my blanket off, my scream echoing off the cabin walls before fading away. I was covered in sweat, gasping for air. My entire body felt as sore as if I had been laboring all day. I was so confused. Had the Northern Lights sent me back to Okana? That strange, beautiful light. No. As the sleep faded and my senses returned, I realized that I wasn't in Okana. I was still in Paraiso. It had been a dream. I felt it slipping away, escaping my memory like most dreams do. I struggled to remember as many details as I could, but by the time my nightmare sweat evaporated, I could only remember a single detail. It was burned into my mind, and I knew I would never forget those beautiful and frightening northern lights, pulsing high above a frozen land. I climbed out of bed and picked my blanket off the floor, tossing it back to where it belonged. Nearby, I found my clothes and newly issued sword neatly arranged. The memory of what had happened just a handful of days before came crashing back to me. Eldric had frozen the sacred waters of Paraiso, and with it, the elves' Tilium, leaving both elves and trolls powerless. They couldn't fight back when his Elden had swarmed over them and then vanished, taking the defenseless elves and trolls with them as prisoners. He had also used the pharaoh-like pawns, getting them to kidnap Eva to draw me to his swampy home in Venezuela. It got me out of Paraiso, along with the fearsome dragons and most of the warrior elves. It let him attack their home while it was defenseless. I smiled briefly at the memory of destroying the pharaohs and their ruler, Queen Tana. Their own greed and hunger for power was really what destroyed them. The first time they had attacked the dragons, I tore their dark Tilium from them with Eva's help and drew it into myself. But nothing that foul could stay evil inside the Keeper of Dragons. Somehow, I had cleansed it and turned it pure. When Queen Tana and her pharaohs ripped their Tilium back from me, they drew it into themselves greedily. Dark souls and purified Tilium were a bad combination, and it had cost them all their lives. I let out a deep breath, sat on the bed, and let the nightmare's tension drain away. I knew what that dream had been about. Basically, my own insecurities. But the land of ice and snow with the northern lights there at the end. It certainly hadn't felt like a dream. Deep inside, I was convinced there was something important about it. But if it was a message, who had sent it? I didn't know what it all meant, but I had to tell Jericho, no matter what sort of training or missions they had all decided to put on me for the day. Those could wait. This was more important. Jericho's deep voice boomed in my head, startling me.
Cole, you're sleeping the day away while a war rages. I'm at the command center. Come find me immediately.
Jericho sounded more irritated than usual, but I thought I heard an edge of fear in his voice. Usually he was just angry or grumpy, so it had me a bit worried. I wanted to talk to him about my dream anyway, so I jumped out of bed and headed down for my borrowed treehouse. Chapter 2. My feet thudded across the twisting sky bridges of Paraiso. There didn't seem to be any pattern, but I had a sense there was one. I just hadn't been there long enough to see it. I had only recently remembered how to get from my assigned cabin to Gaber's command center. It was lucky I did, because Eva wasn't around. She knew the paths better than I did, so I usually just followed her. I was on my own this day, though. When I got to a place I thought was near the command center, I let my Mahir reach out, trying to sense Jericho. He was down there, and I grinned for a moment, happy to have gotten it right this time. Deciding to jump down, I let my dragon take me on wings to the jungle floor, rather than zapping there or climbing down. I really did need to figure out how I zapped last time. My first night here in Paraiso felt like forever ago. Once I reached the ground, I called to my human, then walked to the command center. The first person I saw was Jericho, the leader of the Wolans, the red dragon warriors who defended all dragons. His eyes were glowing bright red as he talked to Gaber and Cairo. Few people were brave enough to stand up to Jericho when he was angry, but the elven prince Gaber looked as smug as ever, even with the dimness in his eyes. I couldn't imagine the turmoil he must be feeling. Almost all of his elves and troll allies had been kidnapped, his sister included. I shook the thought away as I continued my assessment of the room. Cairo was standing his ground for once, too. He was another red dragon, and his job was to protect Eva. He thought they were soulmates, Verum Sali, though he had yet to inform Eva of this. King Evander of the Trolls was there too, but he stood back a bit, talking to an elf soldier I recognized as Bran. He too had lost so much. It was evident by his ragged appearance he was failing at staying strong. Evander's green hair stuck up everywhere, and the bags under his eyes did nothing to hide his lack of sleep. With Kyra there, I looked around the room for Eva. Sure enough, I spotted her sitting alone in a chair off to one side. She was my best friend as a human, and now she was the Golden Dragon, half of the Keeper of Dragons. For some reason, everyone seemed to think that she and I would save the day together. I had doubts about that. I nodded to her and she rewarded me with a sad smile. Jericho looked almost agitated enough to begin billowing smoke. Kyro finally looked away, even though he was one of Okana's best warriors. Gaber didn't. I had no idea what had Jericho riled up. Not that he wasn't always wound tight, but today he seemed ready to blow. I gave Gaber and Evander a slight bow after I stepped through the door. Jericho looked from Kyro to me, and everyone else went silent too and turned to watch. I wished I knew what was going on, but Jericho hadn't told me. I gathered up my courage and said, "Morning. I came as quickly as I could." He rolled his eyes.
"What else would you do? Sit in your room? We don't have time for idle chatter. We need to talk about what to do for the missing trolls and elves. They're our allies, and we let them down once while we hid with our heads in the sand."
Gaber snorted and said, "To your everlasting shame." Jericho kept his eyes on me, ignoring Gaber.
"We will not let them down again," he said, and drove his fist into his palm.
Kyro bowed to me, like most of the dragons did, then said to Jericho,
"Eva has the right idea."
Gaber coughed, catching our attention. His smirk was contagious. I guess it amused him that everyone turned to him. I could almost hear him thinking, "Made you look." He said,
"I like Eva. For a Draumen, she's pretty nice, but I'm not sure her idea holds water."
Kyro said,
"She did make it sound pretty convincing. We travel to the mermaids and ask for their help. We need to bring them into the Elven Alliance anyway."
I knew very little about the mermaids. I knew they had their own form of magic, very similar to Tilium, and that they didn't interact with others often. Other than that, they were a mystery to me, just another creature I thought didn't exist, much like dragons. Jericho's eyes flared a brighter red.
"That's foolish. We need to find the other fairies in Greece and see if they'll join us. We can get extra help that way, and we owe Queen Annabelle and her fairies at least that much, don't you think? They fought bravely by our side, and they too have lost some of their own. Besides, Fairy Tilium is strong, and the mermaids can't do much for us in this war. If the Elden lived at the bottom of the sea, you'd have a point."
Gaber leapt to his feet. "At least I can believe that from a dragon. Leave it to them to ignore a whole race because it's not useful at the moment. It isn't the first time." My single strongest memory from the nightmare came back to me then. Before Jericho could bicker some more with Gaber, I decided to argue the point about the mermaids. From the corner of my eye, though, I caught Eva shaking her head at me. She raised her eyebrows and her eyes were as wide as she could make them go. She was giving me a warning to stay quiet, thanks to reading my mind again. But why should I be quiet? I was going to have to tell Jericho soon, either way. Kyro looked angry, but bowed his head in submission. I thought he looked tense and stiff-necked when he did it, though, and I worried that he might be about to take a swing at Jericho, or at Gaber. Probably Jericho. He said,
"Compared to the Elden, there are only a few fairies in Greece, and besides..."
Jericho cut him off with the bark.
"Numbers aren't the question, and you know it. No one is more motivated to help the elves and trolls than fairies, even if they have to team up with a dragon to do it. And the fairies also suffered while we dragons were thinking about other things. We owe fairies just as much as we owe the elves. If we don't bring the Greek fairies into this, would Queen Annabelle ever forgive us? We need her as an ally in spirit, not just a formality."
I could see how irritated Eva was as she snapped.
"But what about everything I heard about the Miriam? They say it has the ability to..."
Jericho growled, interrupting her. He was good at interrupting people.
"No, they never allow outsiders to try it. Only mermaids have ever traveled that maze. Not since the first elf walked through the reef and created it in the first place. The maze's powers are strong, sure, and its Tilium might even be a match for the Elden, but it's all useless to us out there in the ocean.
Gaber rolled his eyes, but I watched Eva, not him. She squinted at Jericho. She was brave and reckless, and she looked ready to say something she would regret. She had already warned me not to do the same thing, and she'd been right, so I jumped into the conversation before she could reply.
We should listen to Eva, and if not to her, then to Cairo. They both think the mermaids are the best idea. I don't know anything about them, but...
My voice trailed off as I tried to think of what to say next. I knew I'd just lost any chance at convincing Jericho. He laughed, little smoke rings coming from his nose.
It seems you're right. You don't know what you're talking about. Eva can speak for herself, but why are we even discussing mermaids? Stick to what you know, Cole. That's lesson number 4.
I felt my anger rising. Just because he was the high and mighty Jericho, he didn't have the right to ignore people or talk to them that way. Especially when the other people might be right. And definitely not if those people were the keeper of dragons. He turned his attention back to Cairo, not even waiting for me to reply. He shouted,
Your duty is the protection of the Golden Dragon. My duty is the protection of Okana and all that is true. Do your own job and let me do mine. We need to go to Greece and rally the other fairies. It's our only real choice. Fairies have the strongest power in the world, other than Dragon Mahir. And we can't even get to the mermaids fast enough to make a difference in this war. You know they move around all the time.
I listened and clenched my jaw. Even Jericho could be wrong. But my dream kept pressing at me, and I decided it couldn't wait any longer, despite Eva's warning. I raised my voice above the noise and said,
Actually, there's a third option.
I hoped I sounded steady and confident. Everyone turned to me again, but I forced myself to stand tall. I looked each of them right in the eyes. My nightmare clues were important.
I had a nightmare last night, and part of it was more than just a dream. It was a message.
A message?
Jericho eyed me warily.
I had a vision of the Elden somewhere in a land of snow and ice. They were torturing the missing elves and trolls. There were lights in the sky, beautiful lights. The Aurora Borealis, I think. We need to find our missing friends while we still have time to save them. To do that, we need to look in a place like the one I saw. North, not east to Greece or the Dead Sea.
Jericho let out 3 odd sounds, hollow and deep, from the back of his throat. I realized he was actually laughing. I wasn't sure I'd ever heard him laugh before.
Colton, I know you think you have some sort of a clue, but it was only a dream. None of your training has been in dream interpretation. But even if you had the training, could you trust it with the way your training has gone so far? The only area you are even close to keeping up with is your sword. What makes you think you know what that dream meant?
I gritted my teeth in frustration. If I was fated to save the world from the time of fear, he should be listening, not barking orders. It had been more than some random nightmare. I knew it, deep in my gut.
It wasn't just a dream. It was...
He cut me off again, saying,
No, we're not going to abandon our duties and go pursue a dream. Not even a dream, but a silly nightmare. After we get to the Greek fairies, then we can send Realm 2 to explore the far north, just to make you feel better. But I won't waste precious resources on it. We're at war, my prince, and half of winning it will be to manage our resources well. The rest of us have to deal with the real world, and you might want to join us there.
It's not abandoning our duties,
I said. I was desperate to make them believe me. Too much depended on this.
I'm telling you, it was a clue or a warning. I don't know which, but I do know it was important, and we should go look.
As Jericho's eyes flared red again, little puffs of smoke came from his nostrils. He wasn't used to anyone challenging him, especially me, and he sure wasn't laughing anymore. Eva stepped between the two of us, facing me.
We all know dreams are just our subconscious fears getting worked out.
She paused for a moment, hands on her hips as she cocked her head to the side. I had the feeling she was sizing me up, and it felt awkward. She said,
What else was in this dream besides snow, lights in the sky, and our missing allies?
My mind raced as I tried to figure out how to explain everything. I wished I remembered more of my nightmare. The purple buzzards must have been simple dream stuff, but the rest was real. It definitely felt real. Eldric swallowed Okana, then whisked me away to somewhere up north. That's where we would find the elves and trolls, and Okana was in danger. I had to get them to understand. Eva laughed out loud and I lost my train of thought. When she saw the irritation on my face, she touched my shoulder.
I'm sorry, Cole. I don't mean to laugh, but purple buzzards? A giant King Eldric flying around? Come on, it's normal nightmare stuff. I get that it bothered you, but that doesn't mean it was important. Dreams just let you know what you're afraid of. Instead of focusing on your fears and a dream, we need to focus on something real, right?
It didn't usually bug me when she read my thoughts, because it made me feel like we were somehow closer. Together, we were the Keeper of Dragons and best friends, but this time, it felt like she had invaded my privacy.
I know the difference between a regular dream and a warning.
She shook her head, eyes showing sympathy for me. I knew she could feel my conflicted emotions radiating from me.
I'm sorry. I'm not ignoring how you feel. But you might be still feeling the nightmare's effects. You need to let that go, Cole. Dreams can't hurt you, no matter how real they feel.
She turned around to face Jericho, who had been standing there smirking at me. She started in on Jericho again about how we should go to the mermaids. Her whole argument boiled down to the fact that Earth was mostly water, and that was the domain of the mermaids. They were like hermits, I had heard, so outsiders usually didn't know much about them. Jericho snapped.
Yes, but Elden aren't water breathers. The Greek fairies are the ones who can help us deal with Eldric up here on dry land, where the elves and trolls are. What don't you get about this?
I turned away from their arguing and wandered over to a chair, sitting with a thump. When they ignored me, it bothered me. More than it should have. I knew my dream sounded weird, and taking a stupid dream so seriously was also weird, but one of them should care how I felt about it. The dragons pulled me out of their toolbox when they needed something from me, but the rest of the time, they wanted me in that box where I wouldn't be in their way. There was a sharp noise, and I looked over to see Jericho clapping his hands. He said,
No more of this. I'll discuss it with the council, but for now it's time for the Keeper of Dragons training.
He turned to look directly at me and said,
Your first session for today is in the arena. We need to get you more comfortable with your sword. Meet me over in the clearing by the shore in 5 minutes.
Then he turned away to talk to Cairo again. They had put me in the toolbox yet again. I let out a frustrated sigh and headed towards the lake shore. More arena training. Well, that was fine with me. I was kind of angry and I felt ready to let off some steam. On my first step, my stomach began to churn and I stopped in my tracks. I felt suddenly hot and started to sweat. I shook my head to clear the feeling and took another step, but then my vision began to spin, faster and faster. When my stomach cramped up, pain shot through me like a lightning bolt. Everything looked like it slid downward. My eyes rolling back, leaving only darkness. I felt myself falling over backward. It all went pitch black for a second, but then I saw a blinding light ahead. I squinted, then gasped. Far below me was a flat field, covered in snow and ice. Chapter 3. I struggled against the darkness and clawed my way back towards the light, then slowly peeled my aching eyes open. Eva and Jericho stood over me, one on either side, looking concerned. The vision I'd seen was still fresh in my memory as my fuzzy mind cleared. Eva said,
Are you okay? What happened?
She chewed lightly on her bottom lip, her nervous habit. I nodded and propped myself up on my elbows.
I'm fine, just a little dizzy. I didn't get a chance to grab breakfast.
That wasn't the entire truth. In my vision, I went back to the land of ice and snow and saw a scene a lot like the last time. King Eldric wasn't there, but within the crowd of elves and trolls tied up, I saw Mel and Clara looking up at me. Somehow, I could see their faces close up, even though the crowd had been far away. They both spoke together, warning me.
Be careful! They have a trap waiting!
I'd only had a glimpse, but it had that same weird, real feeling as the nightmare. I was sure it wasn't just a vision. It was a message. I couldn't have explained how I knew that, but there was no point in bringing it up anyway. They would just push it aside and ignore me again. But I knew the truth. Jericho rolled his eyes, throwing an apple at me.
If you're fine and you're done messing around, we have work to do. Into the arena, both of you.
I was a little angry that he didn't give me some time off after my vision hit, but he had a sense of urgency I hadn't heard from him before. It was like he was afraid, which kind of scared me a little. Jericho was never afraid. Over the next hour, Eva and I trained hard. I showed a little bit of improvement, but my performance was still embarrassing. Every time I connected with a jab or hit my opponent with a leg sweep, they turned around and knocked me into the dirt. That was frustrating, but I was more concerned about Eva than about how I was doing. Every time I glanced at her, she seemed to be moving in slow motion. Her heart just wasn't in it, like she didn't have any motivation and she kept getting knocked down. That was surprising because before that, she had been advancing quickly. Now, even I was doing better than her, and it hadn't gone unnoticed. Every few seconds, Jericho barked at her. Normally, she had a quick reply and sharp, witty answer, but today, she was suffering his insults in silence. She hadn't even been looking him in the eyes, and gave only short replies. I thought she spent a lot of time looking at the ground. That was definitely not how my best friend usually acted. I was a bit worried. When the shout went out to break up the matches, I made sure I was in line for water next to her. She gave me a faint, forced smile. I really wanted to give her some encouragement because she looked way down in the dumps. Once we got our water, she walked to an empty corner in the little arena field, and I followed. When she sat on a stool to rest, I pulled one over and sat with her. After a long drink from my canteen, I said, "Hey, you feeling okay?" I gave her what I hoped was a reassuring smile. She took a short drink of water and then rested her arms on her knees as she bent forward, looking down at the ground. She didn't answer for a few seconds, but just when I thought she might ignore me completely, she looked up and said,
"I'm frustrated, Cole. I don't know why I'm struggling with the training. I was doing so great before, but now I just feel, I don't know, weak, I guess."
That came as a real shock. She was always confident, and seeing her like this was kind of depressing. I needed to cheer my best friend up.
"Yeah, I saw you out there. I thought maybe you were feeling sick, but I'm surprised to hear you talk like this. I mean, you flew through the training floors in Akana way faster than me. I haven't even really advanced yet, but you went up a floor in the first week, right?"
She just shook her head and her eyes grew red-rimmed. If she started crying, I had no idea what I would do. Should I put my arm around her? Try to comfort her somehow? I just didn't know. This was Eva, after all, and she was always stronger than me. She said,
"You're wrong, Cole. All these things we're doing to save Okana, it's not me finding a way through them. It's you. It doesn't matter how my training was going, because it's not going well right now. That's just like when we were dealing with the Pharaoh in the Eldin. All I did was get lost and get knocked out. You had to rescue me, and it almost cost us everything. I'm totally doubting my whole right to be the Golden Dragon."
I was stunned, but I knew she was wrong. She was sharing the same thoughts I'd had since coming to Okana, and it hurt to see that. I said,
"I haven't really done anything. It might have happened through me, but I was just along for the ride. I just feel useless. I miss my home and all my friends. I came here because it seemed like the right thing to do and because I didn't want to put my parents in danger. And you needed me, and we're friends, you know? But I have to wonder if I did the right thing. Maybe you're better off without me."
I took a chance and put my arm around her shoulder, and we just sat in silence for a minute. She was always there for me when I felt down, so being there for her was the least I could do. Besides, she deserved it, and she was being too hard on herself.
"I can't really believe you feel this way. I mean, whatever I did to the Pharaoh, I couldn't have done it without you. Together, we're a team. We're the Keeper of Dragons. I know it's rough right now, but in the end, it's not going to be me who saves us all. It's going to be you and me together. There are lots of people counting on us. Good people who deserve help. Even if we fail, we have to try, right? When I get doubts, I ask myself, what would Eva do? So you can't be like this, or I'm going to be really confused next time."
She didn't laugh. She just kept silent. I didn't know what else to say, so I squeezed her tighter for a second. Maybe a little gesture could help her see how strong she was. Definitely stronger than me, not to mention braver. She had a confidence I never did, and sometimes that was the only thing keeping me going. I couldn't afford to lose that now, so I just sat with her until the shout went out to train again. I stood and held my hand out toward her, offering to help her up, but she batted my hand aside and popped up to her feet. She looked me in the eyes for a couple seconds, and there was a fierce look in them. Was she back to normal, or did I upset her? She walked away with her head down and her fists closed, but she didn't head back to the field. She was walking into the jungle. Where was she going? I looked for Jericho but didn't see him. I saw Cairo, though, already jogging after her. He was only a dozen steps behind her when she reached the tree line. I shook my head. Nothing I said seemed to help. I let out a frustrated sigh and went back to my training. Half an hour later, Jericho shouted for the day's training to end, and not a minute too soon. I was totally exhausted. My whole body ached from the training. I would be surprised if I didn't have a dozen huge bruises tomorrow morning. My legs felt weak and rubbery from all the effort. Cairo and Eva still weren't back, so I returned to my treetop room. Inside, I looked around for any clue that someone had been in there, but didn't see anything. I checked the places someone could have hidden. Jericho's advice to always be alert and never trust anyone made sense with everything that happened recently. We were in a war zone, and it made sense to be careful. I glanced at my bed as if it had called out to me.
Sleep! Come and sleep on me!
That sounded like a great idea. I could get a nap and maybe feel a little better before my next training. It would probably be training with Gaber, so I needed to get control of my Tilium. I took off my boots and my jacket, got into bed, and stared up at the ceiling. In moments, I felt myself drifting off into a warm, fuzzy, and very welcome sleep. The shrill and sudden sound of someone screaming made me bolt upright in bed. Only half awake, I listened carefully. Were we being attacked, or had I been dreaming? Another scream echoed around me, and I recognized the voice. It was Eva. A chill ran up my spine as I leapt out of bed, grabbed my sword, and ran for the door. Chapter 4. When I was halfway across the first tree bridge, I used my Tilium and blinked down to the jungle floor. I didn't have time to wander around up there because from the sound of Eva's voice, she was on the ground somewhere. I didn't know the paths well enough yet to find my way. Once on the ground, I wondered where my guardians were, but I had no time to go look for them. I put my head down as I sprinted toward where I thought her scream came from. As I ran, she screamed again. This time, she sounded closer, like she was directly in front of me. But so was the maze of jungle. I had wandered the jungle enough since I got here to know how to find my way through. I was learning what to look for to find the clearer paths. Seconds later, I emerged into a large clearing and skidded to a halt. My eyes bugged wide as I took in the scene. Eva was sprinting toward me from the other side, and right on her heels were four huge Carnites. They were practically giants. I'd seen them rip up trees by their roots. Well, I'd heard them do it and seen the damage later. Without hesitating, by reflex, I reached out with my Mahir and summoned my dragon. The transformation happened almost instantly, and I barreled toward her. Far away, other creatures began to scream. The Carnites must have invaded the entire area. But I was here, and so was Eva. I couldn't help them, but I could help her. Together, I thought we might be strong enough to survive this. In moments, I had reached the first Carnite. At the last second, I tipped my wings and streaked upward with my claws in front of me, raking the monster. My claws dug into its thick hide, and it crashed to the ground. I wished I had control of my fire, for this would be the perfect time to use it. Jericho would tell me to conserve my maw here, and fire would definitely diminish it. But I had a feeling it would help us with this fight. I spun around and flew back. When I swooped past Eva, running the other direction, I landed by her and turned back into my human. Her eyes were wide, full of fear, but she stopped when I landed by her. We both drew swords. The other three Carnites would be on us in seconds, and the one I'd knocked over was scrambling to its feet. It wasn't bleeding, though, and I realized my claws had only torn up bits of its thick hide without really hurting it. How on earth could we defeat these monsters? The whole area could be full of Carnites by now, for all I knew.
There's nowhere to run, Eva. We take out the one in front first.
That's all I had time to say before the Carnite reached us. It carried a huge club, an uprooted tree, and it swung down at us. We charged to meet it. Running at top speed with my full momentum behind me, I dove through the air and somersaulted when I landed, so I ended up back on my feet and running. Eva did the same. A moment later, I leapt into the air as I passed the monster, swinging my sword at its belly as I flew by. Thank goodness we had been training with our swords daily since the elves and trolls were kidnapped. It still felt awkward at times in my hand, but at this very moment, I felt invincible. Eva spun and swung her sword at its ankle as she passed, and finished her spin so that she ended up facing the same direction she had been traveling. We both kept running, leaving the Carnite behind us. I didn't know if we'd hurt it, though. With two Carnites knocked over behind us and two on their feet up ahead, I knew we were in trouble. We had let them surround us. I felt panic rising up, and I struggled to keep it under control. I had to be able to think clearly. "On the left!" I cried out as we ran. Then we would only have to deal with one Carnite between us and escape. Still, that one could do a lot of damage. As we approached the one on the left, it swept its tree trunk club at us over the ground, left to right, instead of swinging it overhead like the last one. As the club came at me, I jumped and used my Mahir to carry me over the deadly weapon. I had no idea how I did it, but it worked. I passed right over the club as my Mahir turned my jump into a leap. When I hit the ground, though, my ankle turned. Not enough to injure me, but I fell in a heap. I glanced around for Eva, but couldn't see her. She must have run into the jungle. I jumped to my feet, but had gotten up too late. One Carnite was swinging its club right at me, and I grit my teeth, bracing for a hit that would probably kill me. It came at me faster than I thought possible as it moved in an arc over me and then came streaking down. My last thought was to hope that Eva had escaped. When it was just a couple feet from my head, though, it froze in midair. Confused, I stared at the club that hung above me. Two lines of bright light were wrapped around the club on one end and stretched behind me. I risked a glance back and saw two Wolans a few feet away, standing with their hands outstretched. They must have used their Mahir to bind the club, I realized. I scrambled away from the Carnite in a panic. The creature roared. It shifted its weight and swung its club to the side, and the two guards flew through the air, Mahir still bound to it. One landed in the dirt and rolled, but the other struck a tree. I heard a loud snap and hoped it was just a branch breaking. He bounced off and hit the ground, then lay still. The other scrambled to his feet in an instant, but he wasn't fast enough. Another Carnite leapt through the air, swinging its club over its head. When it hit the guardian, it buried itself halfway into the soft jungle floor. With a shout, I jumped at the Carnite in front of me, landing at its feet. It was raising its club, so I used my momentum to somersault between its legs, swinging my sword with all my might as I rolled by. I came up on my feet with our backs facing each other, and I heard a pain-filled roar behind me. I grinned. Then, to my left, Eva ran out of the jungle.
"We have to fall back, Cole!"
Her eyes were wide, and if the fearless Eva looked scared, I definitely took her word for it. I turned to run back into the jungle with her. I suddenly found myself flying through the air, end over end, spinning fast enough that the sky and the ground flickered into view, one after the other. I felt pain throughout my body, and I caught a glimpse of Eva beside me, looking like a limp rag doll as she spun. I spotted the Carnite I had just cut, one foot in the air in front of it, and realized it had punted us like footballs. We landed in the soft dirt together, tumbling and flopping as we came to a stop. I tried to get up, but my body wasn't responding. All the fight had been knocked out of me. The Carnite wasted no time, running towards us with its club held over its head in both hands. As that club came down toward me for a second time, all I could do was roll and scramble away from it on my hands and knees, trying to get to my feet but stumbling. It walked into striking distance again and roared like an animal in rage and pain, and I understood how it felt. I was sure I'd have internal injuries from being kicked, and there was no way I would survive a hit from that club. As if in slow motion, the club began its descent toward me. I saw a red streak, a blur of smoke and fire that flew through the air and smashed into the club, knocking it flying from the Carnite's hands. The huge red dragon that had struck it bounced off and landed in a heap. I recognized Jericho. He had saved my life. Two more Woland guards arrived with him, shifting into their human forms and pulling their swords as they landed next to me. One reached down and grabbed me, yanking me to my feet. The other did the same to Eva. Neither of them looked at Jericho, and it occurred to me they didn't know he was here. I pointed, and they nodded. Then they sprinted straight at the Carnite. One climbed up its back, and the other swung his blade into its belly. I couldn't stab it without risk of hitting the guards, so I ran to Jericho. I reached out with my Mahir as I ran, trying to see if he was injured as I opened up my senses. To Eva, running next to me, I said, "He's alive!" Jericho was stirring when we got to him, and we bent down to help him up. Smoke puffed from his nostrils as he shifted to human form.